Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of April, recording at 8:11 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, the highlights. And if you've been listening to the audios, you will know that I've been away this week, although I have been aware of what's been going on, and I've certainly I've been able to catch up additionally in here today. And so first off, I'll say that it has been a spectacular week in terms of Fuller Money themes, particularly regarding the trading, but the investment portfolio has continued to appreciate as well. Now, I say this in no way as a boast, but just in satisfaction knowing that some of you who have, many of you hopefully, will have some similar positions and will have done very, very well indeed. Okay, and those highlights, still firm stock markets. The global bond markets had steadied up a little bit, but no significant change there. They've been pretty weak overall, but as I say, they've had a quiet week. The U.S. dollar generally has been easier. The resources side, particularly metals, is where we have seen absolutely spectacular action, phenomenal moves on the upside, and that's despite yesterday's shakeout, which was pretty severe for some positions. Incidentally, my understanding of this is that most of that was caused by increases in margin requirements for a number of commodities. And that also extended to natural gas, by the way, quite a large increase in the margin requirement for natural gas. And that predictably produced a pretty sharp shakeout, and there are two reasons why that occurs. One is because a lot of people fear that it will lead to selling pressure, and so they may stop buying and start to sell, and then a number of other people, and particularly some of the bigger speculators, will say that this may well pressure or people out or cause them to raise stops and so on, so you get bear raids coming in. They tend to be 24-hour wonders for the most part, and we have had some countermanding upward dynamics by the metals in here today, but the big hit yesterday was silver, and that'll take a while. But nevertheless, it has rebounded. Take a while before people recover their nerves. But in terms of the performance by some of these others in here, it's been pretty impressive. Well, okay, let's step back to the big themes, though, and I'll obviously say more about this resources area before completing this audio. In terms of the global stock market rally, no sign as yet of that medium-term correction that I have been talking about at length, or frequently, I should say. No sign of that medium-term correction, and really, it's the chart's rule, okay, as far as I'm concerned, overall. And we have had reconfirmation of many uptrends over the last few weeks, and this week was no exception. And these are Fuller Money favorite areas. For instance, Japan has been strong. Hong Kong, which is more of a recent favorite, again, doing very well. China doing extremely well in here. India pushed back up to new high ground, or within spitting distance of it. And we've seen also Thailand, one of the cheap markets in terms of valuations, very firm in here as well. So good action here all around. The problem, though, is, uptrends can look absolutely terrific, but all the best uptrends, even the best uptrends, I should say, eventually waltz into a cul-de-sac. Now, what might cause that to actually happen? Well, one of the good performers that I hadn't mentioned, I don't think I mentioned it in that quick review of the week, was crude oil. New highs, they're new numerical highs, but as the week closes out, we're still getting after-hours trading here. I'm looking at crude oil NYME at 75.30. That's up 161. So a very powerful move there. And that has reversed a gain on Wall Street, which was doing reasonably well in line with the Asian stock markets and also the European stock markets today, but then started to weaken, particularly in the NASDAQ, interestingly, here, which is down about 1.25% as I speak. So that is a risk. The bond markets are also a potential risk, although they say they had a quiet week. Now, I don't think it's just jumping at shadows to say that rising bond yields become a headwind. First, they're a tailwind as money switches out of the fixed interest sector and into equities, but then they increasingly become a tailwind. But I don't think they've gone far enough to be a strong tailwind. I'm talking about the rise in long-dated government bond yields. But where a number of people who were not really forecasting this rise in the long-dated yields, a number of people I notice are wondering out loud if perhaps is if the 5% level is perhaps a ceiling for U.S. 10-year rates. Well, my own view is that it's more likely to be a floor, at least until we get a significant sell-off in global stock markets. So I do think this is an area of concern, and the oil is certainly rapidly becoming a source of concern. And this is spread, the oil strength is of course spread across the various different products, and of course natural gas has picked up quite a bit in here this week, although it's still comparatively far behind the others in terms of retests of the highs, way behind the others. But it had done best overall on the upside, got the most overextended before the big shakeout and return to the base. Now it's on its way back up. So this could be quite an important problem. How important the problem is depends a bit on speed and the extent of the move. A gradual rise, for instance, next week, if we were to see oil fall back to 70, that would take the pressure off. The markets would like that, even though oil remains well above the $40 and below level that so many people have been forecasting for so long. But the pattern looks awfully bullish, as you'll be able to see easily enough from the chart library. And if we get strong upside follow-through here next week, that is certainly going to cap a number of these uptrends in global stock markets. So it is a time to be a bit careful. But am I going to sell things that I like so much for the long term? And I'm thinking now, in particular of my Asian stock market investments, where valuations remain extremely attractive. The only market that I can single out, well, you could say Japan's valuations are less attractive than they were. I can also say that India is a bit pricey in the short to medium term, but the valuations again are so good, and the overall chart action is still good. And then something like Thailand, where people have been fretting about everything from bird flu to unrest in the south to what else have they been fretting about? The political situation there overall. But here we have a stock market on very, very conservative valuations, 3.8% yield, and we're about a multiple price earnings ratio on the SET index of about 10.5. I mean, there's no way I would disturb these long-term core positions in my portfolio overall. Where I'm happy to, well, it's never happy to ride out a correction, but where I'm quite prepared to ride out a correction as and when it occurs. And if I'd tried to anticipate that correction, I would have sold at lower levels and would be quite unhappy about being out of the market. I'm just not going to put a lot of new money into the market at this stage. But if I that's a personal choice to take a conservative stance here. In terms of my long-term investment positions, I do like to keep a reasonable amount of powder dry, to coin a phrase. If I want to go for the action, and I certainly have, then I leverage up my trading account overall and build up, hopefully, if that works, and I build up even more cash for longer-term investments. But of the markets that I think offer some of the best cushioning as against a global correction. Everything would get hit in a global correction that lasted 3 to 6 months. Let's start from that basis. Everything would be hit. And there would be a risk of a cascade effect spreading from one sector of the market to another. But in that medium term correction, I would think that first that China would be more immune than other stock markets. I think that the very attractively valued markets, again, I mentioned Thailand again, would do reasonably well. I would expect Japan to do much better than Wall Street in a global correction. It's one of the big secular themes. Ditto Korea. If I was going to put new money into the market, and I'm not at this stage, as I've already said and said repeatedly, I would be concentrating on Asia, where I think you get the best growth stories and you get reasonably good governance, certainly from an investment standpoint, and you get some of the very best valuations overall. So that remains one of my very, very big themes, emerging markets, but particularly Asia, and I also mentioned the developed markets. Another one that I would put high on that list would be Taiwan, one of the laggards, pretty good valuations there as well. And Hong Kong. You may say that's a developed country market, but as the quip goes, it's the first developed country market turning into an emerging market due to the presence of all the China listings in Hong Kong. So some of my positions, such as the Atlanta China Fortune Fund, some of those Vietnam funds that are in the library, some of the diversified Asian funds that you see in the library, I continue to regard all of these as extremely attractive, and indeed I'll add to my long-term investments as and when they experience corrections. And I'm not fussed about my India position at these valuations. That's enough to keep me from putting new money into the stock market at this level, but I wouldn't consider selling it unless we had some sort of parabolic acceleration on top of the pretty steady advance that we've seen over the last 3 years and more. Okay, the resources theme in equities. Now, I've said all along that I regard the actual resources themselves, whether we're talking about the nickel or the gold, platinum, silver, I prefer those to the shares that produce the stuff. All the problems go along with the shares, which will do very well when the sector is hot. Thus, our description of them as derivatives, they function in terms of price action like derivatives for the underlying resource. So I do like to play the resources, but I also have a number of the shares. And the question on everybody's mind is, are we seeing too much? Have these gone too far? Are they a bubble, for instance? And I'd say, well, it's pretty frothy. They have been racing up recently. There's clearly has been and remains some clear technical evidence of acceleration, and such action is a warning sign that we are heading towards a correction. Well, we had a walloping big correction yesterday, which corrected some of the overbought. Overbought condition, as I've already mentioned, on silver. It'll certainly take silver a while to regroup after that, but the gain on the upside was spectacular. And I maintain that this is all occurring within a secular long-term bull market. But the most important point that I could possibly make about any of these resources is that people are writing and worrying about nominal prices, not inflation-adjusted prices. We adjust for inflation and look at whether it's any commodity index or whether it's any of the individual resources. And we are obviously not talking about bubbles. And then my favorite mining shares, Inco, among the blue chips, Inco, the BHP Billiton, Rio Tinto, and the number of other major blue chip proxies for those three. Those are the three that I actually hold. The valuations on these are nowhere near in bubble territory. As a matter of fact, you really do have to scramble around in the markets to find that many major shares that have the type of pricing power that these actually have and that sell on similar multiples. And of course, the forward-looking earnings are way behind the moves upwards that we have seen in the metal prices. Now, part of this acceleration in the metal prices is related to the liquidity. It's related to this stage two of the three perception stages of a major bull market that I describe at the chart seminar. First stage, psychological perception stage of a bull market, is that prices are ranging slowly higher, but nobody's interested, nobody believes it can last, and there's very little following, thus all the ranging and a very gradual move, and the best evidence of which is the rising lows. Think of silver, for instance, back in 2003, 2004, ditto gold. Then gradually these trends improve because more people notice them, fewer people are willing to sell short, a few more people join the long side. And then you get what I described last September as that transition to the second psychological perception stage, where really no one has any credibility if they deny the strength. They cannot deny it because it's a fact. And September, October of last year was when, of course, gold broke up out of these multi-year ranges against just about any currency you could possibly list. And of course, you can see 28 of those currencies, or gold and 28 of those currencies, in the chart library. And we've been sort of posting one a day of those charts for the last few weeks. Under that heading, has gold been remonetized in the eyes of investors? Well, you decide with the help of this chart of gold in whatever currency we happen to be showing as we work our way through the 28. And I'll continue doing that just to hammer the point home, particularly for newcomers to the Fuller Money Global Strategy Service. Okay. Now, we say corrections occur all the time. Nothing moves up in a straight line for very long. It's part of the territory, but again, I maintain that this is a secular bull market theme here. The supply inelasticity meets rising demand. And part of this latest move in the resources is fueled by strikes or fears of strikes, but it is also fueled, of course, by the voracious demand from the consumers of these metals, and also demand from investors that we're seeing. I think that is a particularly important factor in the precious metals sector, and I expect that to remain an important theme. And I would say that resources are still attractively priced in real terms relative to many other assets that one could consider. So these are the big themes that I continue to like very much. The Guinness-Atkinson Fund in the US and the other two funds run by Timothy Guinness in the energy sector, the Investec Global Energy Funds, one listed in Guernsey, one listed in London. I noticed they have hit new highs in here this week. That's hardly surprising given the strength of the oil sector overall. These remain immensely attractive areas, and I have no intention of disturbing my long-term core holdings in those funds. So we are spoiled for choice in many respects, but again, I do if I worry about anything, and if you don't worry about anything, if one doesn't worry about anything, or I should personalize it, if I don't worry about anything, then there's probably something wrong with me. I'm being very complacent overall. And that is that I do see the trigger factors out there in terms of the crude oil price, vertigo, higher interest rates, particularly the long-term interest rates, that can spoil the party, but only in terms of a medium-term correction. And that's nothing to panic about. And I would feel that if we get that medium-term correction, as I've said before, there may be so much liquidity sloshing around the system that it might just occur in the form of a ranging pattern overall, rather than any significant 20 to 30% correction in the major stock markets. That is a possibility, but I certainly wouldn't count on it, and I don't want to elevate it to the ranks of a probability. Okay, now let's move on to the long-dated government bonds, and I can do this very quickly. My long-term view remains that this is a secular bear market, that the yields will move higher. Again, not in a straight line, nothing does. But the only way I can envisage a significant rally in government bond prices, decline in yields, is as and when we see the occasional panicky sell-off in equities, and then that would lead to some reversing of that flow of money out of bonds and into equities. So we would get short covering in bonds, some long buying in bonds when stock markets fell sharply. But this would only occur as a response to weakness in stock markets, which people would then translate into economic weakness and lower corporate profits, at least for a while. Now, my trailing stops would take me out of short positions in that event, and I would then just stand aside and wait for the rally to look like it was running out of steam, and then reestablish the short positions overall. Moving on to currencies, I do feel that, I maintain, I should say, that the dollar is on its way back down, and I want to be lightly short the dollar in terms of currency trades. I think that why lightly short if I think it's on the way down? And I own the euro against the dollar currently, but it's not that big a position overall, partly because of all the ranging activity, partly because of the interest rate differentials, and a lot of the reason is that there are far better ways to play it, such as being long the currency of choice in the eyes of investors, which of course is gold and its proxies. Now, enough said on that. In terms of the dollar's downward scope, I think we're going to see it go back to 80 on the US dollar index. That might well be next year. And I don't think we'll see 80 without those US interest rates starting to come off again. Does the US government Want a weaker US dollar? I think all signs point to that. And the main prop that the dollar has right now is the interest rate differentials and the fact that no one can draw a line on the chart and say, right, the interest rate increases are well and truly over. Best bet, we still get at least another quarter point hike, taking us up to 5%. But again, people are already looking beyond the crest of the egg, as it were, of those interest rate increases, thinking about the downward move that is likely to occur. And to tie two themes together with the US running this massive trade deficit of 60 billion or more per month, that's the amount of money that is really required. Well, that means issuance of an awful lot of bonds. And I think that there will almost certainly also be an enormous amount of money printing going on to deal with these structural problems in the US economy. That's a bearish case for obviously for the dollar. The flip side of that is a very bullish case for our precious metals, which are of course also rising against all other currencies. And theme that I've mentioned many, many times over the last few years, in this environment, no country wants a strong currency. It's just who wants it least. And when the dollar had fallen for the better part of 3 years up until late in 2004, other countries were more anxious to weaken their currencies than the US. So we get nearly a year's technical rally in the US dollar. Now, I think that the US government's interest in a weaker currency is greater than, for instance, say, the collective consensus view in Euroland. They don't want a strong currency either, but they haven't had one for a while, and so it'll be a case of the euro strengthens until Eureka, people start complaining, and we'll see the comments. They'll start first at a corporate level, and then they'll move to a government level, and then the ECB will start to fret about it. But we could see the dollar back at 135, 140 before that actually happens. Okay, precious metals and industrial metals. We continue to play this sector because it's very attractive on a long-term basis. And sure, it's hot in the short term, and that makes it also risky in the short term. But trailing stops, as long as those are deployed on long positions, then one ought to be able to benefit from some of this very strong technical action and also escape, stand aside as those trailing stops are hit. I have a very large position for me in gold right now. In terms of the energy sector, I think I've already covered that. Again, secular bull market. I've said all along that all year I've been saying that I felt we'd see a new high in crude oil this year, and it's come even a bit earlier than I had expected, and I certainly think we'll see at least 80 this year. I can't see why not, really, and I think natural gas has $2 to $4 more at least on the upside from the current $8 level. Agricultural commodities, I haven't looked at any of those charts this week. It's a mixed bag overall, but there are no doubt some developing interesting opportunities there. But we are spoiled for choice in these markets, and when all of the resources are moving higher, I don't need to go for something that doesn't quite have the same sort of supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme as we see for the industrial commodity sector. So that's it, folks. I'll just say I hope you enjoyed and profited from this incredibly exciting week in the markets. For me, it's good to be back and see Owen and my other colleagues here, and to be back into the market fray and discussing it every step of the journey with you. So let's all have a terrific weekend, and we'll look forward, no doubt, to more excitement and hopefully more pleasant surprises on Monday. All the best.